what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we are back here to be hypothetically speaking about two more players that may be walking in that Big Brother house door on Wednesday night. Today, in this episode, we are going to have a panel discussion about the returnee prospects for Nicole Anthony from Big Brother 21, if she, hypothetically speaking, is going to be returning to Big Brother on Wednesday. And then we're also going to hear about the other half of the Renegades. It's Memphis, Robert Memphis Garrett. Did you know Robert was his first name? I just found that out a second ago. Robert Garrett, aka Memphis from Big Brother 10. He is going to be coming back. Let's find out if he is a Rob that sucks or not when he returns, hypothetically speaking, to the game. We're going to talk about that here in this episode. Now, on Saturday, when these panel discussions were recorded, it was the 10-year wedding anniversary of myself and the First Lady of podcasting. And so the Iron Man, the robot, Taryn Armstrong is going to hold it down in both of these conversations, and you will not be hearing me on the discussion today for Nicole and Memphis. But don't worry, Taryn has a great panel with Taryn to talk about the return of Nicole Anthony, hypothetically speaking. We're going to be joined by the great Matt Liguori, and then a newcomer to the podcast, Christian Robertson, that he is a therapist, and he's going to be very fun to listen to talk about what's going on with Nicole Anthony. And then in part two, Taryn is going to be with Bobby Goodsby and Isaiah Goins talking about Memphis. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get you set up listening to what it's going to be like for Nicole Anthony to walk out of the Big Brother 21 house and hypothetically walk right back in on Big Brother 22.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our hypothetical series of podcasts about hypothetical players playing in a hypothetical season of a hypothetical All-Stars. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and today we're here to talk about Nicole Anthony and her potato salad recipe. With me today is Matt. How you doing, Matt?
I am good. I'm very excited to talk about Nicole, a very obvious standout from the last season of Big Brother, season 21. It was a rough season in many aspects, but Nicole was a bright spot on there. So very excited to talk about her.
Yes. And joining us for the first time is Christian. How you doing, Christian?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about Nicole, mostly just because I'm unsure how she's going to fare in a second time around, especially so soon. So I'm excited to just bounce some ideas around.
Yes. Can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name is Christian Robinson, currently living in Richmond, Virginia. And for the gist of it, I'm a therapist and I'm back in school getting a degree that's going to allow me to educate and supervise future therapists. And so that really just my interest in people is what got me into reality television. And I just remember I got into Big Brother with Rachel Riley was my big introduction to Big Brother. And I was just so obsessed with her and Brittany. And then I really just carried it on out. I've seen every season since then. And I've gone back and, you know, dipped into the archives and seen some of the earlier seasons too. But the past five seasons is when I've really been diving into like the podcasts and the live feeds as well.
Awesome. So so you're going to be able to like help keep us all sane, right? That's
maybe. No promises.
I think we all need some therapy sometimes watching this show.
Yeah.
It'll be a nice perspective to add into the mix. We do our best to analyze what they're doing and, you know, from a Big Brother fan perspective. But I feel like that is, you know, the perspective you bring is probably unique to what at least what we've all been bringing. And that's the point of finding new voices. Right. So I'm excited to have you here, Christian, and everybody else. It's been cool.
Yeah. Excited to be here.
All right. So we're here to talk about Nicole Anthony and get a sense of where she's at. What are we looking at with Nicole Anthony heading into season 22? Obviously, I have to imagine that of all of the hypothetical players on this hypothetical season, that Nicole Anthony is probably the one that most people are familiar with because she came from the most recent season. So even if you haven't seen past seasons, you've probably seen Nicole But I do think that it's hard to pin down her game and really like what her story really was that season. So I'm interested to talk about what we expect from her heading into the following season. You know, when we were previewing the Big Brother 21 cast, Nicole was the one who talked about locking her parents in the basement and like unicorns. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe she went last in our draft. People were not particularly very high on Nicole, Matt.
Yeah. And now I have to go look and see where I had her in my rankings. But yeah, people were not that high on her. I want to say that I felt probably a little good about her going in, not the best, not the worst kind of thing. She didn't seem like she was going to flop or anything like that. But I think, you know, she like the quirky nature of it all, like you never really know if you can put full trust into that person to be, you know, the best person to put your money on for, you know, winning the season. And when it comes to this season as well, I feel pretty similarly. I think that she's going to be in that house with potentially hypothetically a lot of other really big players and people who are, you know, if Big Brother 21 had, you know, one or two people that were really controlling the action here or there, you know, obviously there was that big group and all Jackson kind of really at the head of a lot of things there. This group is going to have, you know, a bunch of different personalities all over the place. And I agree. I'm not quite sure how she's going to fare. I think I'm optimistic towards her, but I think I could easily see, especially being that one person, you know, coming off of being the fan favorite coming into the house. There could be people that want to just swipe her right off the board and kind of never look back, or she can mix in well. It's hard to say with her.
Mm. I feel similarly in that when she came into the Big Brother house, she was very just intimidated by all of the big personalities. And I mean, there were a lot of big personalities last season, but I feel like they're just going to be exponentially bigger in an all-star season. And so I just can see her getting very overwhelmed very quickly in the early part of the game.
Yeah. You know, she was an interesting player at the start of the game because, you know, she was pretty instrumental in helping helping influence Christy away from certain decisions. She had decent relationships with a lot of the people. She just wasn't included in any of the like solid alliances. She tried to make some of her own, or at least be a part of some of her own. You know, we had the Black Widows, which was, you know, technically a thing for a period of time. You know, she was making relationships with people like Ovi and Cliff and Kemi, and she was trying to play a different game than she ended up playing. The problem was that she ultimately failed at like getting something going. So she kind of had to revert to this very underdog style of play, trying to break up the big alliance kind of play. But and I think that's what people remember her for. But I think it's underreported that she did try to play a different game at the start of Big Brother 21.
Yeah, she definitely was obviously on the outs. We know that whole everything, how that went down with the Grateful or the Nine Undeniable, whatever it was. And obviously that half of them were on the outs. I think I don't know if you said this or if I'm agreeing with my own thought. She was kind of forced to be in like an underdog position, as you know, she was on the outs. There was nothing else she could do. And especially as she had some bonds that she was starting to make, it seemed like she was kind of okay with Nick and Bella, you know, especially with the Black Widow thing. But then all of a sudden when that shifted and everything kind of got flipped on its head and everybody completely turned against her in that one, you know, memorable scene with the HOH room, everything just kind of went south, and it took a while for her to really, you know, feel comfortable in the game again and get her footing where, you know, eventually, of course, we're going to see Grateful start to turn on each other, especially as the jury starts, and especially, you know, the Jessica HOH helped out with that. But it did take a while before she was able to really, you know, start feeling like she could do something in the game again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, I mean, going off of that, she was really good at damage control throughout the game. And when people would rat her out, she was really good at backpedaling out of it. I'm just curious as to how that backpedaling holds up, you know, because like it's one thing to backpedal against cis, it's an Urbella. It's a different thing to backpedal against somebody who's played the game, watched many seasons, and is considered to be an all-star pro at the game.
Yeah, well, let's explore this this you know HOH room moment, because that was really the big defining moment of her early game, that she essentially was able to learn that there was a big alliance going on that she was not a part of, and that something needed to happen to break it up. And she had developed relationships on both ends of the alliance with Holly, and Holly was telling her things about Nick and Bella. She developed the relationship with Nick and Bella, who were telling her things about Holly and Kat. And she had this information and she was trying to play them off of each other. And when Nick had the HOH, she essentially made like a last minute Hail Mary before the nominations and told Nick, hey, those guys, Jack, them, they wanted you gone this week, which was the truth. She found out this information. It was true. And she was trying to get Nick to do something about it, which he should have. But it backfires because Nick does not feel like he has enough time to, like, figure this out, and does not go through with the move. And then after the nominations, when nothing can be done, is now asking, you know, Tommy and them about, like, was this true? And of course they deny it, and Nick eats it up. And it very quickly becomes a story of, oh, so it's Nicole. Nicole is making things up. She's trying to play us off of each other. She's the Vanessa Russo. She's the devil. And everybody gets worked up in the HOH room. And the scene plays out as we saw in the episode and the feeds and however many other times we had to watch it here.
Yeah, that was quite a time when it was Nicole is the best player. She's so sneaky. Look at how good she is. She just got us all wrapped around her finger. That wasn't really happening. She was playing the game. But yeah, that narrative really, really took hold.
Yeah. And to Christian's point, you know, what she had to do damage control here, her game was destroyed. She gets put up on the block as a replacement after the veto is won. And, you know, it technically is one of very few people to survive a backdoor when she survives the week. And I will say that is in part due to the damage control that she did, even though she wasn't even aware that she was going to be saved. But she had to do so much of this. She had to convince everyone that, like, no, I wasn't making anything up. I wasn't doing this on purpose. I was just put in a weird situation, and it's really somebody else's fault. And she pretty much succeeds, Christian.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that just speaks, like, she may not have been in this huge alliance, but she was always good one-on-one with a lot of people. And so she was able to, like, plant those seeds and have those roots for when those moments where she really needed to backpedal off of what was being, you know, accused of her, even though it was true, she was still able to kind of backpedal off of it and take the light off of her a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah. I think those relationships that she had built, I always felt like a lot of it had to do with the fact that some of the key relationships in there were from people like at first, Nick, Christy, Tommy, that she had kind of been friendly with. And that was all really felt like regional thing, like the New York aspect of it all. Nick was from New Jersey, Christy and Tommy, obviously from New York, with Nicole from Long Island. So I always felt like there was some kind of, like, you know, people, you know, you see somebody on the show with you that you is from your home area, you kind of bond with them. And just that connection that kind of brought her closer to Christy early on, that kept Christy, like, wanting to keep her around, when I think, I don't know if it's specifically because of the location thing, but just it helped, you know, kind of create the bond with them that otherwise, I don't know if Nicole gets out of that week alive. I don't know if people are going to like her enough, or if they're willing enough to work with her to the point where after she gets exposed for all the horrible things she does, I know that she did a great job in, you know, trying to recover from there, but it does seem like she's a bigger threat going forward than Cliff was, who ultimately went home. So, you know, credit to her for that week. And also, you know, just the weeks prior, like Christian said, just building relationships. It was all good work that got her past that.
Yeah, and she definitely was helped by, you know, Cliff Notes exposed. But you know, after Cliff leaves, she and then immediately returns. She's able to develop a much better relationship. I mean, she had a good relationship with Cliff prior to that as well. Her and Ovi and Cliff formed the Fellowship of the Zing Alliance, which was It's doomed.
Her favorite alliance.
Yeah, doomed from the start. But ultimately, it did pretty well. And then Cliff is going to win the following HOH. And then the story continues from there. And really, Cliff, I think, picks up from where Nicole left off in terms of playing this group against each other. And Nicole, from this point forward, is a lot more gun shy in this season. She is afraid to make moves, afraid to speak too much, and really starts to take a back seat in the game. And this is, I think, what a lot of people remember her for if they're being critical of her game. This section of time where she's really not as involved, not as active a player as she was before. And we see a lot of this, and I don't know if she ever fully recovers from this. And it makes me wonder how much of this HOH moment where like things just went so wrong for her so fast, how much of that is still in her? And is she going to come into season 22 feeling scared to make moves still?
Yeah. And I mean, right. I mean, just psychologically being ostracized by that many people in the house and to have to sit downstairs and like listen to them, you know, banter and scream and chest bump and all those things, like, I can only imagine how mortifying that is. And so, I mean, I think she made the right move in being gun shy. Like, I think she didn't really have any other option. Otherwise, they just would have swung right back on her. But I do think, right, that she, like, going off of what you said, she sat on it too long. She was shy for too long, and she never really got her footing again. And from this point, in my eyes, it was like, it really became Cliff's game. Mm-hmm. And Nicole was kind of in the sidecar with Cliff.
I think coming off back-to-back, you know, going in back-to-back seasons for her, I think it kind of can only be helpful to have this be so close. I'm sure there's, you know, disadvantages that we can talk about or maybe I'm not thinking of, but she has everything that happened to her so fresh in her brain. It only happened last summer. You know, it's not too long ago. She's had the past year to sit on it, reflect on it, just like everybody else that plays this game does, but her especially, because she hasn't dropped the show once since then. She has been podcasting and talking to other Big Brother players, you know, on her show that she's been doing since then. It has been nonstop since she got off the show that she's had Big Brother on the mind. And I'm sure that's for a lot of people as well, but she's been outwardly talking about it, talking through this and that with a bunch of other players, some that are on this season. So I feel like her brain has to be well set, like she has to be like ready to go for this season with a good game plan in mind and, you know, the ability to correct a lot of mistakes that she might have made, learn from things that happened to her, learn from stories that she's been getting from other past players. So I think she could be set up very well just based on, you know, the ability that she has going into it. It is weird. Have we seen Janelle, I guess? Oh, yeah, the entire BB6. I was going to say, have we seen anybody else do back to back before? And of course we have. So Paul. So good work.
I mean, I agree, but I also worry, like, you fall off your bike and then you think about like, okay, this is what I'm going to do the next time I get on my bike, and I'm planning it out. I've got everything prepared. But the second you get back on there, it's a different experience. And if she comes back into the house and she's smelling the same smells and she's seeing the same sights, like that can bring you back to where you were before, and it could have an impact on her game, I think.
Well, lucky her, there's going to be a potential different outside of the house that will lead her inside.
And I also think it depends on how she decides she wants to play this round. Like if she goes back into the house and it's like, I want to play like right in the middle of the two sides again. Like I think she's setting herself up to be in more or less a similar situation as she was last time, like always having to backpedal. But if she goes in and she's like, you know, hey, I'm just going to try and get rid of that impression of me and I'm going to play entirely differently, she's opening this whole new window for a game style that she never even really got to explore in 21.
Yeah. So, you know, we know that toward the end of season 21, after Cliff really taking the driver's seat for a little while, she gets into a situation where, there are a few different pairs. She wins that double eviction. It's a big, big moment. She gets Christy out. We head into the final five. And this is where all hell breaks loose, where, you know, she wants to go back on the deal and get rid of Holly. So, Jackson has won the HOH. He put up, Cliff and Tommy. Nicole wins the veto. She knows that she's going to use it on Cliff, which means Jackson is forced to put Holly on the block. And so they have to choose between Holly and Tommy. Nicole and Cliff, essentially control the votes, and they just have to decide who they want to evict. And this is when Nicole starts to, this is again like where we see, like, okay, now she's ready to make the move. This is the Nicole that we saw in the early days of the season. She's ready to do this thing. She's like, hey, where I'm from, you shake someone's hand and you stab them in the back, and I think that's what we have to do here. But unfortunately, after a bunch of, you know, Jackson makes up some lies, we see this big blow up with Jackson and Tommy. She ultimately is going to kind of let Cliff make the call, and let Tommy go. And now, I think that there's a lot to be said about whether this was the right move. We talked a lot about it at the time. I think it was very hard to say one way or the other. And if you think about it, I actually feel like Tommy leaving was better for Nicole because it did give her an out to win sitting next to Holly. And that's better for her. I'm not sure what happens if she sits next to Jackson, or certainly I think if she sits next to Tommy, she might lose. And certainly Cliff, it felt, she probably would have lost against. So keeping Holly in the game actually probably was better for her, but that was not really the line of reasoning at the time. In from what she was thinking, it was just like, I can see both sides. And she just kind of let Cliff take over the negotiations and make the call, which, again, I feel like harkens back to, you know, that gun shyness that she was getting on the bike. And then she was like, OK, fine, Cliff, you can do it.
Yeah, that final five took years off my life. Watching that entire week play out was the most stressful time, especially, like, you're not even a player in the game. You're just, and my position at the time, which I can't really put my head fully back in at the moment to remember if I, you know, can change my position on it. But at the time I was fully, you have to evict Holly here. There's no way around it. I just, you know, like many people that were on that side as well, it was just, keeping Tommy in the game is one person that potentially could take you to the final two. You're keeping in a pair right now. Jackson and Holly seem much more well suited for at least, you know, the part one and part two of that HOH comp to potentially beat you guys and then take themselves to the end, which you knew that they were going to do. They were never, you know, whatever. We don't have to rehash all that, even though it's already happening in my head. But it was really hard to watch that because I think for a majority of that time, Nicole knew what she thought was the better move. She thought taking out Holly was the way to go. And I think Cliff was also there a little bit, but then Cliff was always more so kind of leaning towards Jackson and Holly, it felt like to me. And then as the week went on and they just kind of, you know, were bouncing back and forth a million times and they landed on evicting Tommy there, especially after that blow up, it was just so tough to watch, you know, have that all play out. I mean, it was like, I guess, somewhat entertaining TV, you know, at that big final five blow up. But, you know, as somebody, as people that were rooting for Nicole and really hard in on that position of you need to evict Holly here, that was stressful because she didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, you have to evict Holly. But I was also rooting for Tommy at that point. So it's like very hard to get back in the mindset of where I was. But I feel similarly that she did the same thing with Cliff before when Cliff and Christy were in debates of how she was going to use her superpower. And she was like, I would personally tell Cliff to make a deal with Christy and then back out of it after she uses it and nominate whoever he wanted for the replacement nominee. But she was like, but that's Cliff. That's my ally. He can do whatever he wants. And she like put, you know, she put Cliff back in the driver's seat. And even in her like post game interview, she was like, at the end, if I could have taken Cliff, I would have, even if I thought I would have lost him, because I'd rather lose to him than win against somebody else. And I think that's just a questionable mindset to have, especially going into an All-Stars game. I think it needs to be a little bit more cutthroat than that.
Yeah. And you know, at the end of Nicole's story, she did come kind of close to winning this game. All she needed to do was win that final three HOH. There have been plenty of Big Brother winners in the exact same spot. They just they won because they won that final HOH and they wouldn't have won otherwise. But she did not win it, and not really for lack of ability to either. She was perfectly capable in competitions, and had these been the regular kind of like the more normal, you know, final three competitions, she probably would have won, or at least come closer to winning. But the competitions have become more physical over time, and she basically had no chance against Holly and Jackson, and so she is going to lose here in third place. But it, again, should not be understated that, you know, despite the flaws in her game, she comes very, very close to winning season 21 of Big Brother, and could be coming back as a fan favorite winner this season if the competition layout had been similar to how it was even just three seasons ago.
Mm-hmm. And then we have two Nicole winners in there, and that makes things already worse for these theories of Nicole's going to want the other Nicole out, Franzel wanting Anthony out. So I hope that's not the case, and maybe the fact that she didn't win will help out with that. But I mean, look, a lot of people, you know, you go into Big Brother, all 16 of these people that go into the house are going to be people that want to win. But Nicole, for some reason, it's always felt like a little bit more when she got out of that, or a little bit different, I should say, when she got out of that house. And you like watch back the interviews of her talking to anybody on the red carpet or in the backyard, you guys included, Taryn and Rob were back there. And she was just like the level of excitement within her for the fact that she realized, you know, she won fan favorite, and hearing from everybody, you are so loved because you were true to yourself on a season where so many people were bad doing this and that, and you were the one person who people were able to get behind and root for and relate to and all this kind of stuff. And you could tell how much that meant to her and still means to her to this day, I'm sure. So, you know, Big Brother gives, and all these reality shows, they give everybody certain different things. So while I'm sure she would have loved to get the win, I think she really got out of that experience what she, you know, something that she really took away from it. And coming into this one, less so than a lot of other players, do I feel like she thinks she has something to prove? I feel like, and tell me if you guys disagree, I feel like she's going into this looking forward to another fun summer and probably, you know, trying to win, but I don't think she's going to be one of those people in there with like, I have to win and prove myself.
Yeah, I feel very similarly. And I think like if there's anything that she might have gained from last summer and being America's favorite, it's that just all of that anxiety that she had while she was in the house about how she was being perceived and if she was on the wrong side of things. I feel like it just helps to soothe that a little bit and let her go into the house a little bit more confidently and maybe give her a little bit more space in her head to make bigger moves or to do more risky things.
So yeah, Nicole comes out of season 21. Fan favorite. She's loved. She was definitely overwhelmed at first, but I think, you know, she's, I imagine has like, you know, come into it now. Where does she stand now? Because I don't mean to imply anything about Nicole specifically, but there have been a lot of people who have left fan favorites and come back and it's all gone wrong for them. I don't think that's Nicole. I think that Nicole is genuinely who she is, and I feel like she'll come back. She's always going to be Nicole, but it's something that we should talk about. Is there a chance like that either she comes in worried that that's going to happen? You know, you can be loved all you want. If you're somebody with insecurities, it's always going to be in the back of your mind like, yeah, they like me now, but it's just because they haven't seen X. Or will we see Nicole playing a different game and see a different reaction to Nicole? Where are we at in terms of stock on Nicole in the fandom?
I mean, it really just depends on like where her anxiety is at right now. I don't know how late she could have been on Twitter up until this point, if she's in the house. But there's been, she's a very hot debate on Twitter, and people really like to root for her or really like to tear her down in terms of wanting to see her on this season. And so it just depends on how far she's been into that and to see where she feels like America feels on her. Because if she's coming off of feeling like she's America's favorite, I feel like she goes in there pretty confidently with the least amount of anxiety. Of course, as you were saying, like the anxiety still exists. And I think Big Brother is a game that like purposely feeds on a lot of anxiety and anxious pathways in your brain. But I think that's the best case scenario. But if she's, you know, been pretty deep into social media and Twitter and people and her being a controversial person to be brought onto the season, I think, I mean, she's going to be right back in kind of her shell right at the, like the undeniable incident and be kind of gun shy and afraid.
Matt, is there any chance, do we need to be worried that Nicole goes on to Big Brother 22 and she becomes a We're the Good People person?
No, I really, maybe it's wishful thinking. I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think she had the narrative all right in her head back when she was, you know, last season. She never did something like, nothing that she was saying that people found to be endearing about her or relatable about her ever felt like she was putting on for the cameras. Like she was always being so true to herself. And I feel like that's not something that I can see changing. I really don't think that that's her. And I really would hope not to be proved wrong. I don't think so. There's a difference between, you know, social media and real life, to say the least. Her social media in the past 10 months has turned into like a kindergarten playground with flowers and unicorns and rainbows and butterflies. And that has kind of been, a little off-putting to some people because, yeah, while that's the character of Nicole that, you know, she's created and she's turned into this podcast that she's been doing, and it's just kind of her branding at this point. You know, she's going into the house not with any of that. You know, there's not going to be a floating unicorn over her head the entire time she's in there.
Hey, you never know.
She's going to have like, she might have like a t-shirt with like all of these different things on it. So Slippers. Maybe it will still kind of be on her. Yeah. But I still think at the end of the day, I have a hard time seeing her, specifically Nicole Anthony, being somebody that can really change a whole lot from what we saw her as. I think we'll be okay with her.
Okay. Alternatively, is she so like, she's now, you know, she's the nice person. She's the genuine person. Does she come into this season now a little bit afraid of changing that perception of her? Is she going to be a little bit worried about being too cutthroat on the season, lest it, tarnish that image?
Well, can you imagine Nicole in a majority alliance? How does that go? What does she do? Mm-hmm. I don't know. We've never seen it. And I have a clue what it would be like, because that's the kind of thing. Say she does get into a majority alliance and now she's in the undeniable, hopefully a lot less gross and hateful than the previous one. But then there's people on the outs, and then she starts to feel bad for them. And then things get really messy. She gets caught up in her head. Like, am I turning into the people that I was against last season or that, you know, treated me in a certain way? So yeah, I mean, there's definitely an aspect to that where she could think that she's being perceived in a certain way because of who she's working with or how things start to play out. But I'm also kind of looking at this cast and I'm hoping that we don't have to worry about that, but it's, you know, you can never be sure. Everybody, especially, you know, wants to make sure they're doing and saying the right things, hopefully, in the house. The live feeds have been watched very closely in the past couple seasons, and mm-hmm. I'm sure she's aware of that.
Yeah, and I think even if she does find herself in the majority alliance, she's still, I mean, she's an empath by nature. So I feel like whoever's in the out, she's still going to be, you know, having those very personal conversations with them and getting in and, you know, planting those seeds with them. And so, it's just, I can't see her being a bad person in the house. I always will think that she's going to be nice and she plays with empathy. And there's just there's lines that she doesn't cross. She has boundaries more so than a lot of Big Brother players, at least on her season. And so I feel like she's going to stay, you know, pretty in line with the boundaries that she's already set.
Yeah, I think it's so fascinating. She's in such a strange situation, having just played. She has no in-between seasons as a break. She's coming off as the fan favorite from that season. I feel like there's so much extra surrounding her return than almost anybody else in terms of like fan perception and identity and branding and all of it. I'm really curious to see, you know, who is going to be Nicole when she walks in that house. I think that a lot of people would love to see, you know, the Nicole they saw before, but I think we will see a slightly different Nicole. The Nicole I'm looking to see is the one that is a little bit more sure of herself, that is going to get into a big alliance, and that is going to play the game that she started to play in Big Brother 21 before it was ripped away. That's what I want to see. And I think that she will be underestimated in that regard coming into season 22. I think, again, a lot of people remember her for being sweet, being on the outs, being an underdog, and they're not going to anticipate that she has the chops to play a more aggressive game, a more strategic game, essentially. And that could be to her to their detriment. But I also think that her status as the current fan favorite puts that kind of that caser target on her back as well. So where do we think she sits coming in with the other house guests, Christian?
I mean, I feel like, always with Nicole, any way that I played out in my head, I feel like she ends up at least in the jury. I just, the way that she plays the middle and is able to get in and relate to most people, regardless of their background, where they come from, and just seeing her do that with almost all of the house guests in her season, I feel like she has what it takes to make the jury, but I don't see her going much further past that. Because then by then, I feel like she'd be exposed for playing both sides, if she is playing a little bit more of a bolder game at that point.
Yeah, I think and hope, but I definitely think that she is capable of going down to the jury at the very least. I feel like Nicole, even if she comes in with, like, you know, like you said, maybe a little bit extra confidence, a little bit extra something that she didn't have in the last season, I feel like she is still that soft, like lovable, like friendly face that you can kind of confide in, that you don't want to send home, especially in a cutthroat all-star season where there are big players, big plans going around. Is Nicole really going to be the biggest one that's, you know, like sending out these missions and, you know, going after the big names? Like, she'll be along with some of the big players, I'm sure, you know, to go after some of the other big players. Maybe she gets caught in the crossfire and she's like the number one ally of Tyler and somebody wants to take a shot at Tyler and Nicole's on the block, whatever. But at the end of the day, I feel like if people can avoid evicting her early on, there's going to be so many more people that they are going to want to get out. I think it obviously, you know, it's tricky here because the list that we seem to be going with has a lot of old school names on it. And if, you know, if they end up leaning on each other, that kind of works against her. If she hasn't, you know, connected with each and every one of them, I don't know. It could go either way, but I feel like she, again, is the kind of personality that is built to last a little bit longer than, yeah.
Yeah, one of the things I'm concerned about with Nicole Anthony here is actually a sort of similar thing that I'm concerned about with Nicole Franzel, which is her pregame. Now, obviously, we don't know everything about the pregame. We know very little, I'm sure, about the pregame. But my basic understanding of it is that I think that Nicole Anthony has not pre-gamed. I think that she did not reach out to anyone. Again, like, she strikes me as somebody who is a rule follower. She would not break the rules. I don't think that she told anybody that she was going to be on the season. And thus, her name wasn't confirmed by any like other alumni in the pregame stuff. What made it obvious that she was on the season was like her social media behavior. And so what I'm concerned about here is that I feel like this was the worst possible way to do the pregame, to basically not talk to anybody, not game with anybody, but it was pretty obvious that she was going to be on based on her social media. So everybody else is talking about who's on the season, who's on the cast. They're probably reaching out to her. She's probably telling them, no, I'm not on, even though they know she's probably on. They're probably talking about her as, okay, well, she doesn't want to work with us. She's not willing to play ball. I could easily see her being an early target because of that. Plus, she's the most recent fan favorite. She's easy to just throw up on the block. It's not going to make any waves because she doesn't have any built-in allies coming in. I'm very concerned about this early game for her on All-Stars here.
Yeah, I wish I had a full list of people that she's had on her show, because she's obviously talked to, you know, a couple of people. I know she had Janelle on. I know she had Tyler on. I kept thinking about Paul. Her and Paul had definitely gotten close, but Paul's not, supposedly, I'm pretty sure he's not on the season. So that's a pretty big blow for her to not have him there. I don't know that I don't know. I feel like Nicole specifically is she's had a mentor, I guess you could say, by her side for the past 10 months since she got off the show. Somebody who has been around the Big Brother universe for many years. And of course, you know, if anybody is confused, that's Eric Curto from Your Reality Recaps. The two of them have become good friends, and Eric's been around for a long time in the reality TV world. So yes, of course, he knew that she was going back, and that has a lot to do with the social media thing. I'm sure he gave her advice, and I can't imagine it was bad advice. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know much about, you know, what he possibly would have said, but I have to imagine he would have told her, you should talk to people, you know, just kind of send a little message, a little hooray here, a little yay there, happy to see you, doing well, this and that. Maybe nothing too intense, like, let's work together this summer, let's devise a plan, and let's go after Janelle. Like, nothing of that nature, but at least like a little friendly reach out to say hi.
And if she ends up, you know, kind of in the bottom in the early part of the game, at least it's, she of all people knows how to play at the bottom. She knows how to be scrappy. And so I feel like even if she does end up there, she's one of the people that I feel more confidently about being able to navigate it in a way that'll help her get at least to the jury.
Yeah. And yeah, I think, Matt, you make a good point that she has talked to a lot of these people before. I think, you know, Rob would attest to talking to somebody on a podcast does not mean that they will be able to work together on a season. But it's at least something. Again, though, if she, you know, I really think a lot of this depends on how much the pregame was a factor for Nicole. I think that will affect her at the start of the season. But the thing about Nicole is that she is so good at developing relationships with people. So if she has the opportunity, if she's not thrown up on the block immediately, and they let her get a chance to get her roots into people, I do think that she can work her way into the game, even if she's not already in it. So while I am concerned about her in the early portion of the game, I think that there are a lot of people on this cast that she can work well with. I think that Ian is somebody that that would definitely, you know, work well with Nicole. I think that they would need to be a little careful about how open they are about that, kind of like, you know, two kind of nerdy people with glasses working together. It just kind of amplifies that target. But I do think that they would get along, and I do think that they could work well together, Matt.
Yeah, I agree. I think Ian is definitely somebody that stood out, and I mentioned Tyler's name as well. Let me pull this list back up. Just anybody from the recent seasons. I think she could make something happen with Bailey. I don't know about Nicole Anthony. And of course, I don't even know if we mentioned him yet, but if David's there, David Alexander, that is a huge help, of course, to her to have somebody that was on her season that she was relatively friendly with, even though he wasn't in the house very long. So there's going to be a couple different pairs in there. People that are, you know, Kaser and Janelle, Cody and Nicole might be considered a pair. They were on the same original season together. So if there are duos, I don't know that Nicole and David are going to be the one that's out in front, you know, the most threatening of all those duos. I have to imagine not, that won't be the case. So having at least, you know, they're going to be an obvious pair, but if Nicole can go off and make some friends and David can go off and make some friends and they can kind of combine, then there you go. Then you're set up great.
Yeah, immediately when I saw Nicole's name, I was like, I hope she can work with Ian, and I hope it can be a secret. And so she worked a lot with the people on the season that were considered to be the outcasts. That's like a pretty charged word when you see the demographics of people that she was working with. But like, it is my hope that she can at least find one like strong ally within like the in crowd or whatever that looks like in the structure of this season and keep it on the down low and not feel the need to swing back and forth too soon. Cause I think that was just her big misstep was that she knew she was in the middle early in her season and she started to like swing back and forth and give away while just volunteer too much information too soon.
So I think the big question is, can she get in with Janelle? We've been talking about Janelle being a central piece, I think, in a lot of different relationships and groups. Is she the kind of person that Janelle would work with? Because I thinking about it, I'm actually not sure. I don't know if Nicole Anthony gels that well with Janelle.
Yeah, I think if that relationship doesn't work out, it's because of Nicole's end rather than Janelle's. I think Janelle would be willing to work with Nicole, but I feel like the energy, the style of gameplay that Janelle tends to be, who knows what Janelle's going to be like, you know, all these years later, mm-hmm. She's not going to be Janelle BB 6 and 7, but she is a louder player. She is a more proactive player, somebody who has a lot of attention on her at all times. And I kind of feel like Nicole could shy away from that and, you know, not be against Janelle, but I could see her not being actively drawn to her.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, especially as I think this season is really going to be about Nicole finding her voice, I think at least if I was her, the last thing that I would want to do is align myself with somebody who has a super strong voice that no matter how much I elevate my voice in comparison to, it's just going to look less, you know?
Yeah, and Janelle always struck me as the kind of player that she likes to play with other big personalities, big aggressive game players. You know, remember, Janelle is the person who, you know, called the other side the nerd herd in season 6. Nicole probably identifies as being a nerd in a herd of some sort. So I just don't know if their personalities mesh super well. And I think that's bad news for Nicole in the early portion of the season when Janelle might be kind of a central piece. Now, if Janelle is playing so hard that she very quickly explodes and shatters everywhere, then Nicole being there to pick up the pieces could be helpful to her. But yeah, I feel like, and again, too, because like Janelle has so many options, it seems, of people that she can work with. So even just a little bit of disconnect personality wise seems like a big shot to take when it comes to having a relationship with her. And, you know, with Janelle, you might end up losing so many other people who are in that that circle. That could be dangerous.
Yeah, I think they just have nothing in common at all. Like, can you even think of one thing that the two of those people have in common? It's just they're not from the same area. They're not the same age, really. They don't, you know, Nicole doesn't have kids. Janelle's been living her adult life for the past couple of years. She's been on multiple different shows. Nicole, this is only her second. So it just feels like they are completely separate. You know, I don't know what they're going to relate to. I think if they do ever link up, it'll be through a mutual ally. I can see very easily Nicole getting in good with Kacer. If Kacer's there, Kacer's the friendliest guy, and I have no reason to believe why Nicole and that, you know, Nicole and Kacer's energy would match. So maybe that's a match there, and then that works out. And I also didn't leave Devon. I did not mention her earlier, but I feel like that's somebody that she could connect with because Devon is way more open to playing with like a lot of different people, and just that friendly energy that the both of them have, I think would match.
Well, we didn't talk about it too much when we talked about Devon, but in Devon's first season, you know, she had Steve who was like, I love you. Please, let's work together. And she kind of was just like, she kind of brushed him off. Do we think that she has learned from that? Do we think that she is now looking at these like nerdier archetypes and being like, you know what? Maybe I should work with them. Maybe this is a good spot for me.
I would hope so. I mean, in all of the seasons of reality television that she's been on since, I would hope that she's learned the lesson. Just personally, I would love to see Nicole and Devon hit it off. But I do sense some hesitation there from Devon. So we'll see.
Mm, Yeah. Because again, Nicole was in a, you know, an all women's alliance briefly. I think that there are a lot of women on this cast who would love to have an all women's alliance. I think that she could fit into that kind of, but again, like her personality is pretty different from a lot of these people. I do think she could get along with Danny Donato. I think that, again, when we talked about Danny, I said that she's like the cool kid that rebels against the other cool kids, and is like cool with everyone. And I feel like that's exactly the kind of person that Nicole can get along with. But I think it depends on where the other people fall.
Literally, yeah, like, nobody in Big Brother 21 disliked Nicole, right? But besides that one week that people got fired up at her. So
she's able to build, she's able to make these connections and people really like her. The problem that Nicole faces and that she faced, especially in season 21, is that it was hard for her to get respect from people, that they liked her a lot. They were very fond of her, but they didn't bring her in. They didn't make her a partner. They didn't share anything with her. They just kind of thought like, oh, well, we like her. We'll save her for last, or like we'll use her over here because we like her so much. That respect factor is a big thing when it comes to finding allies that will actually work with you and not just use you. And that's where I'm feeling again. I don't know how many people on this cast, especially it's such an older cast. Although she did manage to connect with Cliff as an older person, maybe that will help her, that it's an older cast, because they're not older people generally aren't as clicky, and I think they tend to respect people a little bit more. So that could actually be a benefit, but personality wise is where I'm finding a hard fit.
Yeah. Especially as much as, again, I would love to see an all women's alliance, I just don't see Nicole being part of it. Because she herself was like, I'm a guy's girl. And then from the moment she walked in the house, she was like, people like Holly, people like Christy, people like Sis, they're scary to me. They make me anxious. They're not the type of people that I would generally vibe with. And so when I'm thinking of these like big, outspoken, beautiful women that are going to be on All Stars, I just see that really being an uphill battle for Nicole, if that's the route that she is trying to go.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got to have a number one. And I mean, it was Cliff for the majority of the time last game. There's no Cliff here. I think David might be the closest person that you would automatically be drawn to as her number one because of the fact that, of course, they were on the same season. But that doesn't, you know, necessarily mean that they have to be number ones. There still could be people in the house that she is more drawn to as, you know, somebody she can confide in. So I'm not sure if you guys, I don't know that I see exactly who that is.
I think that a good connection for her is going to be Kevin Campbell. I think that her and Kevin Campbell actually would get along pretty well. I think that they could work really well together. And that's where, you know, I have some hopes there that that could be a good connection.
I still can't believe he's here. Hypothetically, of course.
Hypothetically speaking.
Yeah. Hypothetically. Yeah, no, that's a really good call. I think the two of them would mesh together really, really, really well. Nicole goes for, like, Nicole also does seem like, you know, again, I don't remember if we said this already, but just like the outcast kind of person that she was in her season, that I think she relates to in real life kind of thing. Kevin seems to be along the same lines, and I can easily see them gelling well together, and I would love to see it.
Yeah. What was Kevin's click was, what was his click in that season? It was it off? No, it was... Yeah, it was offbeat. He was the offbeat. Mm-hmm. I feel like Nicole is also an offbeat if she's in a clique, right?
I just don't remember how much of a fan she is, because I'm wondering, like, this isn't the Kevin podcast, but I'm wondering, like, how many people are going to know of him and know him enough to want to work with him. I don't know how many of these people know Big Brother 11 very well. Probably a lot of them. I don't know.
Honestly, I think Kevin is a kind of a forgotten figure in a lot of the discussion. I mean, until he was brought up recently, you know, people didn't usually talk about Kevin unless it was like, you know, best to never win. That Kevin guy is pretty underrated. But other than that, he doesn't usually come up very often. So it wouldn't surprise me if he comes in with a pretty blank slate overall. Although it doesn't help that his biggest, the biggest thing he's known for is the lie plan. But I do think that's a good connection for Nicole. So one more thing. How do we feel about the Battle of the Nicoles? Do we think that there will be a Battle of the Nicoles? Or do you could they maybe get along?
I personally can't see it happening. I just don't really see, just with the speculated cast list, I just can't see like this two armies battling it out to get behind this. I feel like maybe there might be some tension about it in the beginning, but I don't think it's really going to go anywhere.
I think they could easily work together if they want to. There's not like the barrier where I feel like, where I think it would be hard for Nicole and Janelle to find something to bond over, to connect over. I feel like the Nicoles, I mean, they have the first thing that they have in common is pretty obvious, the name. But I think that, you know, Nicole wears glasses too, right? Or she did at some point. So the glasses thing, just, you know, just the little things that can kind of bond you to somebody. That's why we're bonding Ian and Nicole in our heads. So why not bring Nicole into that as well? Especially if Nicole, you know, is into working with Ian. I think people have been talking about that. I don't think I expect there to be an actual war between the Nicoles. I think there's going to be a lot of attention on Nicole Franzel. If all these pre-gaming rumors, like if there's any truth to any of that, maybe in the early game, there will be attention on her. But if Nicole needs somebody to like confide in and lean on, that's where Nicole Anthony comes in, and she's a perfect kind of person to talk to. So I could see it.
All right. Any final thoughts on Nicole Anthony heading into All-Stars?
Happy she's here. I'm excited. I think that she has the potential to do well. I think she was always going to be a lock to be on the season. You know, she was the fan favorite. And if she was going to be able to say yes, you know, just like everybody else, in good health and ready to get into that house, then I see no reason why she wouldn't have been there. So I'm happy she's there. And I'm excited to see what she can do. I have low expectations for a lot of the players. And I think I feel the same way about her. I think she's not somebody that I'm expecting to do great things here. I, like I said, I think she's here to have fun and have another good summer. Maybe just, you know, keep her good reputation going, which is another thing we talked about. But I'm just excited she's here.
What's the prediction? How far does she get?
Just like jury or not jury?
Yeah.
Jury.
You can get specific.
Jury. Oh, like specific. 7th place.
And there you go.
Yeah, I would say I would put her right in that early jury spot. I am super excited to see her, but I don't know that I have like super high hopes. I think just the fact that she knows how to play from the bottom, she has experience swinging back and forth and breaking up, or at least attempting to break up alliances. There's just a lot of potential there. It's just a matter of whether she taps into it or not, and if the cards fall into her hand.
Yeah, I'm pretty concerned about her very early on. She's one of my candidates for like early targets. However, if she survives, I think that she is underrated in her capability as a player. I think that she is scrappy, and I think that she, while she does have an uphill battle to climb, to fight, I think that she's capable of it. But because of that, I think that it's, you know, every step of the way is going to be a struggle for her potentially. And so, you know, I think it's going to be difficult for her to make another deep run. But if she does, then, you know, I do think she could have a chance at winning, but I think it's going to be tough for her. So, there it is. There it is. Nicole Anthony. I'm very excited to see her again. I think people know how much of a fan I am of Nicole Anthony, but that's what we have for her. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this one. Christian, where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can find me at @_KRob. So that's KROBZ, both on Instagram or Twitter.
All right. And Matt?
Find me on Twitter at Matt Liguori. And if you want to keep up with the Glee podcast that I'm doing, you can check that out as well. It's all on my Twitter page. So excited for this season. Excited to be back tweeting about Big Brother and talking about it. So should be fun.
All right. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at @ArmstrongTaren or twitch.tv/TarenArmstrong. Thank you so much for joining us once more on this hypothetical journey. I'll see you next time.
All right, everybody. There you have it. There's our preview of Nicole Anthony coming back. I don't know
how Nicole is going to do. I think I'd be a little bit bearish on her chances in the game. I just feel like that she's like an easy person to put up on the block for the first couple of HOHs. She's not super well connected to a lot of people. I don't think she's the kind of person that's going to go mad or go, you know, get crazy and like call you out if you put her on the block. I think she just kind of would kind of like be kind of bummed out, but she's used to going up on the block a lot from her past season that everybody just saw. So I feel like that she's somebody who could end up being somebody who is viewed as expendable in the first couple of weeks without getting a lot of blood on your hands. But we'll see. Nicole Anthony is a fun one to watch. Fellow Long Island native, and looking forward to seeing her come back. And I thought that Matt made a great point about, like, if she ends up in the majority, like, actually, like, what does that even look like for her to have any sort of power in the House? I think it'll be fun to see. All right. Next up, we're going to hear all about the return of Memphis, hypothetically speaking, to the Big Brother House. That is going to be on the other side of a word from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by betonline.ag. They've got some words for you now. And then at the end of this podcast, after the conversation with Memphis, they have a special presentation they asked me to tack on to the end of this podcast about the return of not just Big Brother, but also sports to the world and all the weirdness surrounding the resumption of sports during this summer. And that's coming up at the end of this podcast. So if that's not your thing, make sure to stop listening after we get done with the Memphis interview. But first, a word from our friends over at betonline.ag. And then Taryn's going to lead the panel all about Memphis.
Sports keep coming back. So does your chance to bet on them with our exclusive wagering partner, BetOnline. Major League Baseball is now in full swing, and the NBA has also begun. There's no shortage of ways to get in on the action. BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. Make sure you stay tuned, as BetOnline sat down with ex-athletes from the different professional sports leagues as they gave their opinions on what it will be like to play without any fans, health risks, and what a championship means for the 2020 season. NFL Hall of Famer Eddie George, seven-time NBA champion Robert Horry, and longtime Seattle Mariner Harold Reynolds discuss all these topics in what BetOnline has called Fandemic. Visit BetOnline today to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. Don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the Welcome Back to Sports bonuses. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at Podcast One. BetOnline to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up for a free account and make sure to use that promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus. Visit betonline.ag and don't forget that promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. We are back once again to hypothetically talk about some players that hypothetically might be on Big Brother 22 All-Stars 2. Lots of twos. We're here today to talk about Memphis. Memphis from season 10, who might be back to play once again. I am, of course, your host, Taryn Armstrong. And with me to talk about Memphis is Bobby. How you doing, Bobby?
What's going on, Taryn? Happy to be here. You know, we've had this long off season, and now I'm just ready to get back to some Big Brother, get back to the roots where we can talk about this and entertain myself and you guys to everything else that's going on in the world right now. We need a little entertainment. So very excited to have some Big Brother back in our lives.
Yes. And also joining us for the first time is Isaiah. Isaiah, how are you?
Hello, Taryn. How are you? I'm just very excited to be here. I'm not going to lie.
Can you introduce yourself to us? Who are you?
Sure. So my name is Isaiah Goins. I am 22. I live in Wilmington, Delaware, and I am a huge Survivor and Big Brother fan. I've been watching Big Brother since like BB13, and I was 13 at the time. So I was very confused because I actually started like midway during the episode where Brendan and Lawan challenged to get back in. So I stuck with it, but I was like, I got hooked so fast. So that was interesting.
Did you just miss the superpowers?
Yeah, just missed it. So like I had to get on the train a little bit later, but I watched 14 directly after and I just got addicted. So I went back and watched all the seasons, and you know, I make music, I make YouTube videos, I act, I just, you know, and I spend countless hours listening to RHAP. So, yeah.
All right. Well, very excited to chat with you. Why did you decide that you want to talk about Memphis? Who is Memphis to you?
So basically, I think Memphis Garrett as a player is very interesting because him and Dan just by themselves are probably one of the best duos in Big Brother history. I think Memphis kind of just did himself a disservice a little bit by just trusting Dan undeniably. I think Dan working actively to make him look bad kind of hurt him in the end of the game. But I think he has a lot of qualities as a player that makes him a very good player and definitely deserves to be an all-star.
And also famously, definitely not a womanizer, right?
But
right,
no.
Yeah, definitely not a womanizer. No, I'm actually really excited to talk about Memphis. Memphis and Dan, the Renegade Alliance, that was one of my all-time favorite alliances. Really came together when they really needed each other and they were able to work it all the way to the end. But it'd be crazy to see Memphis back on this show after so long, after so many seasons, to be able to get him on the show and see what he can do in this house without Dan. See if it transfers over. I was looking at his Twitter the other day, and he's liking all these, if it's him, liking all these posts talking about him playing again. And he's been commenting on what people have been saying about him. So it's just exciting to see that there's a potential to get one of these, you know, mid to older season players back in the game and see what happens. You know, he made it to the final two before. Let's see what he can do without Dan. I'm excited to see it.
So we remember Dan, or we remember Memphis for Dan and the Renegades, but that didn't even really start to happen until the second half of the season. And I feel like a lot of people might be listening to this. They might not have watched season 10. They might only know Memphis in relation to Dan, or they maybe forget about Memphis's game prior to the Renegades. So Isaiah, can you tell us about like what was Memphis up to at the start of season 10?
Yeah. So Memphis, basically 25 years old. He's a young built guy. Almost right out the gate, everyone looked at him as like a threat, just based off of his physicality. And he naturally gravitated towards like the Jessies and the Angies and the Michelles. But after Jesse's HOH week, he was almost instantly looked at as a threat to take out. I remember people like Jerry and Rennie and Brian almost saying that this guy needs to be dealt with immediately just because he seems so cutthroat. He really adapted to the situations a lot because his allies were taken out almost immediately. And he was always found himself in that island. You got Jerry calling him out for being a womanizer, as you said earlier. And yeah, he engaged and fell for the bait and got in an argument. But, you know, Memphis definitely, until Dan linked up with him, he was struggling a lot early game.
Yeah. Can we settle this? Is Memphis a womanizer? Why was Jerry calling him a womanizer? What's going on here?
Jerry was calling a lot of names in that house. So, you know, Judas, womanizer. There was a lot of names being thrown around by old man Jerry. But, you know, that kind of gives to Jerry's charm a little bit. I was watching the first couple episodes and the last episode yesterday, and I forgot how much people had disdain for Jerry. That was very interesting to see. I totally have forgotten about that. But as far as Memphis, you're absolutely right, Isaiah. If it weren't for Brian really working to get himself out of the house the first week, Memphis would have been gone because he wanted Memphis on the block after the veto ceremony, and they were ready to vote him out. But because Brian played too hard too fast, he was able to save himself and get to the end like he did. So had it not been for Brian, we might not be even talking about Memphis at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that early game Memphis he really is a very different guy than the guy who plays in the second half. He is a lot quicker to jump into fights. He is a lot more polarizing. He is, you know, he does get in with the coven a bit, but is ultimately part of the big split that happens in the first half of the game. And he's always he's a player of the game. He's a strategic guy. He gets involved in things. But he was not really like the Dan kind of player. He was not under the radar. He was not behind the scenes until Dan kind of introduced him to that kind of gameplay. And he adapted to it pretty well here, Isaiah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that he was trying to do more of like a bros thing, actually, at the first hand of the game. I think that him linking with Dan definitely put him in a way better position that he originally was in, because if it wasn't players like Dan and Keisha, I think he would have been gone a lot longer, a lot earlier in the game.
Yeah. We have the week where Keisha's birthday happens and there's big drama and Memphis ends up on the block with Jesse. And this is the culmination of the entire first half of the game, where these big alliances and groups are clashing, and it's down to Jesse versus Memphis on the block. And Dan is the swing vote. This is a very key moment in the entire season. Bobby, can you walk us through Memphis's role in this?
Yeah, so basically, thanks to America, Memphis was able to stay, because had Memphis really, you know, said and did anything to really piss off America, Dan would have had to do America's vote and vote Memphis out of this game. And who knows where either of their games would have gone, what kind of path it would have taken. Or I guess Memphis would have been out, but what path Dan's road would have gone down. So it's very, very crucial to Memphis's game that somehow America wanted to side with him, and they really had a thing for Jesse. They wanted to give Jesse all these certain things. But it's crazy how one vote really changed the entire trajectory of that game.
Yeah, we see that ultimately Dan is going to side with the Memphis side of things. And then that means that Dan, Keisha, Rennie, and Libra are going to be joining Memphis as the new alliance moving forward. But they're going to quickly lose Libra to a Michelle HOH. But how did Memphis avoid the block here when Michelle wins again? Because he was just on the block. He was... they were trying to get him out, and then the very next week, now all of a sudden it's Libra and Keisha on the block, and Memphis is totally safe. What's going on, Isaiah?
I definitely think that since, just for the fact that Keisha and Libra were like a lot closer with April and Ollie earlier in the season, and I feel like they felt like they were almost stabbed in the back, like way harder than what Memphis did to them, because they actually trusted those two. So when those two are out there arguing and screaming and doing all this yelling, fighting, and then Memphis is just completely avoiding all the drama, I think that definitely worked to his benefit.
Yeah. This is when, you know, around this time is when Dan and Memphis are going to get together. They're going to form the Renegades. And really, like, under Dan's direction, Memphis's game is dramatically improved. He is never nominated again until Dan does it to him twice. And he's going to make it all the way to the end in this group with Keisha and Rennie. Again, they operate so well together. He's a very good foil to what Dan is trying to do. And while Dan is calling the shots here, he does rely a lot on Memphis's connections and his competition ability. What we see from Dan in season 14 is how he uses Danielle and uses Ian in different ways. I feel like Dan has a level of like respect and reliance on Memphis more so than he does in future seasons, which is important. I don't think it's necessarily like a Derek and Cody level of partnership. Memphis does bring a lot to the table here, Bobby.
Yeah, absolutely. He played a phenomenal end of the game. Now, he didn't make the close personal relationships like Dan did on an emotional level with people. And I think you really can see that when it gets to the jury phase, with the jury questioning that he absolutely bombed, in my opinion, compared to what Dan did. But he could tell that that was a big aspect of his game that maybe he lacked or suffered, and it cost him possibly part of his game. And so the fact that he was able to get as far as he did, not winning any HOHs, not really getting an emotional level with people, but sticking true to his alliance, he shows that he's a very big team player. And the fact that he had this alliance with Dan, and he was able to work with someone to the end of the game and get them as far as they did. I think those are the big aspects of his game and maybe a few of the challenges that he may face if he does come back.
Yeah, I do think that a big part of Memphis's story as well in his first season is the jury management side of things, because what Dan pulls over on Memphis is the greatest example of jury management we've ever seen. Dan remains to be the only, you know, regular season winner of the U.S. Show that won unanimously. And Memphis is the only loser of the show who lost unanimously. And that's a big deal. Memphis, who did have these, you know, bonds with people. He was very close with Keisha. He had a good relationship with Rennie. He had good relationships with even some of the other people on the other side of the house. He had the better relationship with Jerry. And yet Dan was able to essentially sabotage all of his relationships and point Memphis, use Memphis's womanizer, getting mad about being called a womanizer side to really make him burn those connections so that they were so mad at him and respectful of what Dan was able to do that Memphis just completely floundered in the final questioning and was not able to get any votes, Isaiah.
Yeah, and I definitely think this is almost the prime example that if you compare the Renegades to alliances like Jason Guy and Daniel Reyes or the Hitmen, both of those alliances, they actively made sure that they were looking out for the best interest for both players. Where if you look at alliances like this and to a degree, Chilltown, you always have that one person in Dr. Will and Dan who are always going to go out and do their own thing and then connect later. And it almost felt like Dan was using Memphis as almost like a tool because, you know, like you said, he had really good relationships with people. And I mean, he was able to win his vetoes as well. He was never like an HOH comp winner, but he won 3 consecutive vetoes. So it seemed like Dan was almost using Memphis as a tool more than like a partner, but that's just how his cards came.
Mm. So, I mean, what do we think about that? Like, is Memphis what kind of reputation does Memphis have coming off of this season? How are the other players going to view him as he walks into the house?
Yeah, I absolutely feel that he is the muscle to Dan's brains. Like, he was the person to win the POVs when Dan couldn't win them. He needed him in those situations. So I think that was a big aspect of what he did in his game. And I think it'll transfer over if he plays again. People look at him as someone who was able to, you know, compete in these competitions, someone who was reliable and was a strong, strong ally. I think those are the two biggest aspects that will transfer to his game.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think when I look at Memphis, I think people will look at him, if they even remember him, for the newer players, they will look at him almost like a Cody. I think it's definitely like a Batman Robin aspect where people are going to look at him like a loyal soldier. He never really turned on Dan as the loyal guy. He even said specifically during the jury questioning, I'm not going to badmouth Dan. So I think people are going to look at him as like a super loyal guy. Do I think he's going to follow that suit if he's going to play in the season? I don't think so. But I feel like that's the image he's coming in with.
Yeah, it's interesting because Cody comes in having made the big mistake. Cody won the final HOH and took Derek over Victoria. That's what everyone remembers Cody for. Memphis was planning on doing the same thing, which was if he had won the final HOH, he would have taken Dan and cut Jerry. But Dan ended up winning and saving him from that sort of humiliation, essentially. So he doesn't really have that reputation, which I think could also could be a bad thing for him because people don't necessarily remember how loyal he was to Dan in the undying sense, in the sense that Cody was undyingly loyal to Derek. But they might remember him, you know, sitting Keisha down at the final four and saying, sorry, this it's not going to work for you. And Keisha being really upset about it and betraying Jerry and betraying Rennie. Again, Dan's work to like just tarnish Memphis in the eyes of the jurors in season 10 could also work to tarnish Memphis in the eyes of future players who watch, go back to watch the season to see what Memphis is all about. Am I wrong here?
Yeah, no, it's totally possible. Like, it depends on people's perspective of his game. Now, if we're thinking people are going back and watching season 10 and remembering, which they totally could be, but remembering his game, I mean, I look at it as he was loyal to Dan. He stuck with him. He was, you know, he worked with Keisha and Rennie as far as he could. I feel like I feel the opposite. I feel like he looks like someone who is trustworthy to his alliance. He had to make game moves towards the end, and it worked out for him, and he got as far as he did. Yes, he doesn't look like Cody, where he took the wrong person to the final two. That is true, but he never was put in an opportunity, so he doesn't look like the dummy who didn't make the right move. He just looks like someone who was taken there, but Dan played such a phenomenal game that it's really hard to compare Memphis's game to anyone else that was in the final two besides maybe like a Tyler or a Cody. I'm not saying he was on Tyler's level, but he's like that in the fact that he was someone that I feel was loyal to the end, to Dan, and did what he had to do for him and Dan's alliance. And I think that people in this house will really look at that as an opportunity to take someone with them who maybe is a little bit older. Maybe he's not as physical as we've seen in this competition. Also, he's a father now, so maybe he's more emotional and he can bond with people who are also parents in this house. I feel like it's really a good aspect in this game, and I think that people are going to really remember that.
Yeah, how do we think, where is Memphis at now? Like, it's been 12 years. He is long removed from this game that he played. He is, coming in potentially a different guy. Does he come in, softer, more mellow, less threatening? What do you think, Isaiah?
Well, I do remember actually watching one of Dan Giesling's Instagram lives he had, I believe, last year. And he had a bunch of BB alumni basically come on. And Memphis was one of them. I mean, if you look at Memphis now, he's like 37 years old. He owns a couple restaurants and hotels now. He lives in Florida. So maybe he can bring that business aspect to Big Brother. I don't know. I mean, last time we saw someone with that kind of like transformation, I guess, Mike Boogie, when he did come into BB14, and he was the business owner when he did come in that. But you saw that his approach was like a little bit more, a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a lot more professional, I guess. He's not the same kind of like kid that he came in Big Brother when he first entered. So maybe his personality could have changed a little bit, but we'll have to see.
Does he have the same drive? Because Memphis was always just a very passionate player, very passionate about his own, performance, essentially. Very cold, I think, to other players at times. Yeah. But very determined, very very aggressive gameplay from Memphis. In both of the different kind of ways that he played in the first half and the second half, just in different formats, essentially. Does he come in with that same passion? Is he going to play this game really hard?
I don't know, because I mean, he seems like a relatively successful guy now, so it's not like the money was really the big thing that drove him his first season. So I mean, he has money now, so it's like, is Big Brother really on his mind now? I don't even know if he still watches it right now. So hopefully he's looking to go in and have basically proved himself to not just be like this dumb player, but possibly just to show that I don't need Dan to win this game and maybe I can do this by myself.
Yeah. Does he come in with a chip on his shoulder? Does he come in with I don't need Dan. I can stand on my own. It's like Renegades. We were both great. Is that what we see?
I don't think that he is looked at in the same light as Dan is, because in recent years, there's been a lot bigger players to make bigger moves, even if they were sidekicks. Tyler Crispin, I mean, he wasn't in a sidekick, but he didn't win his season. So I feel like Memphis probably isn't going to be looked as big of a threat, especially with a lot of the newer players who probably didn't even go back and watch that. But I feel like he's definitely someone that should be looked out for. And I feel like he'd be key for almost any alliance.
So what do you think, Bobby? What is the story of Memphis here, from his first season to this season? Where do we think he lands in the arc of Memphis as a character?
Honestly, it's going to be very interesting to see, because so much time has passed. His life, I'm sure, has completely changed. Like Isaiah said, he owns companies. He has kids. Maybe there's difference in his, ability, or maybe differences in his desires to play this game. But obviously, if he's there, if he's playing this game, he has a desire to play this game and has a want to try to win, because otherwise, why would he go back? He has so much going on at home. Why would he leave? So I do think there's a desire to be there, and I do think that there'll be a desire to win. And I have no idea what we're going to see from him. Probably not a womanizer, I hope. But it was very, very, it's very interesting, and such a great opportunity to see someone who's had so much time, hasn't played before, since the last season, and come in there and possibly do well. I don't see who's coming for him. I don't see who's going to be, trying to take Memphis out. There's so many other targets in this house that I think he can really work his way in and make it up the ladder to possibly get just as far as he did before. I think there's a lot of potential for his game.
Yeah, I think he's hungry. I think he wants it. I think Memphis is coming in. I think he wants to pick up from where he left off when he last played, and show people that, like, the Renegades are great. I don't think he has a chip on his shoulder. I think that he is still friends with Dan. I think that he's still like we're buddies, and it's time to prove that the other half of the Renegades is just as valuable a piece. Like Ian, who? What are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. So I think he's going to come in. I think he's going to play hard. I do. I think he's going to come and he's going to do what needs to be done. I think he's probably learned a lot from Dan. I mean, Memphis probably more than anybody else was in an opportunity to learn a lot from what Dan did, because he was with Dan for so much of what happened, and he wasn't on the receiving end of it, but he was on the end of it where he saw what Dan was doing. He was on the receiving end of Dan, poisoning the jury against him. I think that we're going to see a lot of Dan-like play from Memphis. I think we're going to see, him come in and he's going to try and do the Dan game. And I think he's kind of capable of it, especially, at his age now. I think he can come in. I think he can slow play it at first. Probably not going to want to win some competitions at the beginning, and then try to build some kind of alliance. I think we're going to see the Dan formula from Memphis. That's my prediction here, Isaiah.
And that's a very interesting way to look at it, because I wonder if those tactics work with, allegedly, if Keisha is playing in this season. Keisha, who knows if she's like, I know what this guy is capable of. It's total BS. Don't fall for it. But there's a lot of people coming into the season with something to prove. And I definitely think Memphis is ready for the challenge.
Yes. And I think that he will probably be focusing a lot on the jury vote. Again, the only person to have lost unanimously, that's got to sting for Memphis. That's got to be a big point of he must feel like he played a great game, but he is the worst at jury management of anybody, including Gina Marie, which is like, that's rough, man. So that's got to be something that he pays attention to, because we talk about this a decent amount, especially on Survivor, that, like, if anything, coming in third place is often better feeling. It feels better than coming in second, because, you know, granted, you get money in second place and not in third place in Big Brother, but but like, because it like, at least you get to tell yourself, well, if I had just gotten there, if I just gotten a little bit more lucky on that last competition or whatever it was, I would have won. But if you're there in second place and you, the jury just decided not to give it to you, then you know that these people that you played with, that you're friends with, didn't think you were worthy, and that you probably didn't have a chance to win the game ever, because you were never going to win that jury vote, and it's going to eat at you a lot more. And I have to imagine that Memphis is going to be looking at the jury a lot and paying a close attention to how am I going to make sure that I can win a jury vote in the end, Bobby?
Absolutely. I think that's his biggest hurdle going into this season. He has to shore up those jury votes. He has to be able to connect with people in ways he didn't in his previous game. Now, let's also give him credit. He was phenomenal in this game, especially towards the end, but he was going against arguably the best player of all time to play this game. So you have to look at that as an aspect. And I'm sure there's a little chip on his shoulder that's like, yeah, Dan gets all the credit for something we formed. Like, I did some things too, people. I won some vetoes when I needed to. Like, yes, Dan played an amazing game, but I also helped him. He wouldn't have got there had I not been with him and helped win some of these things and form some of these allies. I think there has to be a chip on his shoulder with him thinking, okay, I have to show that I am just as strong as Dan. I think that's going to come into it completely, where he wants to show that he can be the Dan-like player. You know, he wasn't just the underling to him. He's someone that's on the same level. Now, that could also be a hurdle in his game, because he doesn't want to come off too strong or, you know, too much like the Godfather, where he's just making all these moves too early or too fast. So I think that if he's able to connect with people on an emotional level, really shore up those jury votes like he saw Dan do in his season phenomenally, I think that he has real potential. He just needs to make sure he doesn't play too hard, too fast like Dan, because Dan did it at a slow, even pace. He made it happen throughout the season, doing little things here and there to really shore up his entire game. So if Memphis can do that and stay on that level, he has real potential in this game.
Now, something else to add to that. When Tyler lost in Big Brother 20, Dan tweeted that he doesn't think that style of game can win anymore. He feels like, especially without the jury questioning format being back to the old way, that Machiavellian style just might be on the way out. And then, you know, like, he lost, Tyler lost, like, Paul lost a few times, that Dan kind of feels like it might not be possible to win that way anymore. And if he was talking to Memphis prior to the season and jury management was something that they were focusing on, I wonder if Dan really believes that, and if so, what kind of advice was given to Memphis regarding that kind of metagame strategy of maybe you shouldn't play as hard, maybe you should play just a little more low-key and social, because that's what tends to win games nowadays.
Yeah, I definitely think that there's a huge possibility that he did give him some advice like that. I think if I use Dan almost as an example, would he really follow his own advice, though, if he went inside the game? You know, Dan is naturally a very impulsive guy, and he can go in knowing what to do, but it's like, are you really going to do it? I think Memphis could do it. I think his archetype typically does well in Big Brother. It's just that he also might need to avoid doing things like making final twos with a lot of people, because I think that actually hurt him a lot, especially with like Jerry and Keisha. So if he makes the correct adjustments, I think that he will do well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, I do think that Dan went into season 14 planning on playing a slightly lower key game. But just like over and over, his worst case scenario happened, and it put him in a position to just go wild. And I think he revels in the wildness of it. But I think he's also capable of playing lower key. And so I do think it's possible that he is advising Memphis to do the same. And that, hey, if you can help it, don't be me on season 14, because it's a rough ride, man. And in the current, you know, meta game of Big Brother, it doesn't tend to win jury votes. But again, Dan may also be looking at it in the way that I'm looking at it, which is this is an all-star cast. This is a cast of people. It's got people like Tyler, like Janelle, people that do respect the game and that would absolutely vote for a player like Dan or Tyler or whoever. Ian, even like Davon, like so many people on this cast are like famous for not being bitter jury members. I think that's actually not the case. I don't think that Memphis needs to play low key. I think that he actually needs to play aggressively. I think that he needs to do some Dan moves if he wants to win the respect of the jury. And so I'm very curious to see where this lands and what kind of intent he has coming into the season, Bobby.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is an all-star season. This is people that want to see game players get far in this game. They want their season to be represented by someone who deserved to be there. And so I think that, yes, I totally agree. He needs to be aggressive at certain points, but it's a marathon, not a sprint. And I feel like for this game especially, people are going to come out hot. They're going to be going and jumping right into things, trying to form alliances, trying to backstab, try to be entertaining TV. And I'm not saying that Memphis shouldn't be along for that ride, but I feel like he needs to take it slow. Let other people make targets on their back while you're forming alliances and trying to get, you know, all the information you can, and then strike when the moment's right. I just think that, especially with All-Stars, people are going to come in very, very hot. And I think that that's going to be a big aspect to his game. If he can just make it last whenever he needs to, let these other people put targets on their back, and then strike when the iron's hot.
All right. So let's look at this hypothetical cast. What kind of connections does Memphis have coming in? Where do we see him landing? Obviously, the first one is Keisha. He played with Keisha. He betrayed Keisha. Do we have any idea what kind of relationship they have nowadays?
I'm not sure how they are in 2020, but I do know usually when it's a returner cast, despite if they have bad blood or not, usually there's always some bond that's forged just by knowing each other. Keisha and Memphis were really good friends in the season, and I will imagine, minus him getting completely blindsiding her, that hopefully they would patch things up and continue on. I don't think Keisha would really trust Memphis in the same way she did in 10. But I do feel like they will at least work together short term.
I think it's interesting because, again, if Dan was involved in any way, what role does Dan have in this potential relationship? Has Dan been helping pregame for Memphis? Did he help Keisha? Probably not, I think. Dan, you mentioned Dan's Instagram thing where he talked to Memphis. Keisha was not on that. I do not know the current state of the Dan-Keisha relationship, but I have to imagine that at the very least Dan was helping Memphis in the pregame. How does that impact his relationship with Keisha, Bobby?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think if he's helping anyone, I think he's giving as much advice to Memphis as he possibly can. Now, as far as Keisha, I think that we really have no idea what their relationship is. You don't really see anything, you know, on Instagram or on Twitter. There's really nothing that really bonds them together, you know, in these 12 years since we've seen them play last. So it's going to be interesting because I want to see exactly the aspect that they have between each other. Is there still disdain for what Memphis did to Keisha? Did that relationship ever get repaired? We really don't know all the details. We might think we know certain things, but we have no idea. So that is, in my opinion, the biggest foil to Memphis's game, is if Keisha tries to sour him in front of people, if she tries to put him down and put him at the bottom of an alliance or possibly on the other side of the vote. I think if she has a vendetta to get her revenge on Memphis for what he did in Big Brother 10, that's going to be the biggest hurdle he has to overcome. Now, who knows? Maybe they're great friends. Maybe they've been talking about working together. We really don't know. So I think it's going to go one way or the other. I really don't see there's an in-between spot for that.
Anybody else, Isaiah? Who else do we think could have some kind of connection or interaction here with Memphis?
Well, naturally, I mean, people were speculating that Dan and Derek would be working together. I mean, we got their other halves in a sense with Memphis and Cody. So, I mean, maybe we could see some sort of sidekick alliance here, but in retrospect, actually could hurt them if you think about it, because if you look at Memphis and Cody and you see them hanging out around a lot, they can just be like, oh, they're just doing the Dan and Derek thing. So, I mean, if they approached it correctly, and maybe it could be successful. I mean, they both have the keys to make it towards the end of the game. They know what they're doing. They both have really good social game. It just depends on if they're able to move correctly.
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit with the Cody preview if Memphis and Cody start hanging out, they're just asking for people to be reminded of Dan and Derek, I think. And I think that's a very dangerous spot for them to be. But there's also another member of the Renegades that's on the cast, Ian Terry, who was in the Renegades 2.0, which was not quite as genuine as the first one, but a lot of people have been speculating, okay, what about Memphis and Ian Renegades 3.0? How do you feel about that, Bobby?
I don't see it happening. I really don't, because they're completely different people. Dan's like the perfect in-between of those two characters, like those two personality types. I think Memphis is too much of a, you know, manly man, or, you know, maybe even a little bit of a hothead from what we know, from what we've seen in Big Brother 10. And Ian is too much on the other spectrum of that. I think Dan was perfectly in between where his personality meshed well with both sides. I don't see those two coming together. I would love to see it. Like, let's do, you know, Renegades 3.0. Let's see that happen. But I don't see that happening. I think that there's other people like Tyler or let's see here. Now I'm blanking on who else I was going to say. Well, I really do think Tyler and him could get along. And I do agree with Cody. I think that there's something there. I think they can work it out. But you're right, Tyler, they cannot come out strong with that alliance, because then it's just, you know, both their alliances 2.0.
I mean, hey, if Memphis wins, then I think the Renegades become the all-time winningest alliance, if you count Ian, right?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Anybody in a Renegades alliance has won.
Oh my gosh.
I agree. I'm not sure that Ian is going to be the right fit. And again, like, I think Ian will be a little bit skeptical. If Dan is doing any pre-gaming for Memphis, but not Ian, then like, I don't know how much Ian trusts Dan in any kind of game sense. And, you know, via that, may not have a full trust in somebody like Memphis. And that could be interesting. I do think that that Dan seems to have a pretty good relationship with Janelle. Janelle respects Dan a lot, and he respects her a lot. And I could definitely see a connection there with Memphis. Memphis, being connected through Dan to Janelle, and with that kind of get included in a potential group with like Kacer and Danielle Donato or whoever else is in that crew. And so I feel like that could be a pretty good spot for him, because he kind of stands out. He's not super connected to those people, and there's bigger pairs and targets amongst those people, competition threats, big personality, these big reputations, where he can kind of remain a little bit hidden and work on some other social relationships. What do you think, Isaiah?
I'm all for it. I would love to see old schoolers alliance. If that could actually come up. I do think that would be an interesting dynamic if there was some sort of like old school versus new school. Do I think it will happen? No, there's a lot of weasels in the Big Brother house, but you know, I think it would be interesting. Another connection I was actually thinking about as well, if he even gets on, is like Enzo. If he wants to make like a new brigade, I can see Memphis getting invited to that as well, with like a Cody or a Tyler. I can see something like that in the works, because that's how Memphis, I mean, that's how Enzo operates. But
yeah,
I feel like everyone's going to naturally look at Enzo and be like, don't let him alone with any guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think Enzo's going to take one look at Memphis and his heart eyes are going to pop out of his head. And he's going to be like, yes, this is exactly what I look for in an ally. Because Memphis just perfectly fits the brigade archetype, I feel. So
if you think about it, too, actually, because the way I look at him, it's almost kind of like Lane in a sense, where Lane and Memphis both had that one person in Brittany and Keisha and that they were super loyal to. And then they both burned that bridge with that person for another group in the brigade or another person than Dan. So maybe he would fit that archetype that Enzo looks for in a group.
Yeah, he's kind of like take Lane and add a lot more passion and strategic gameplay, and you've got Memphis. So it's definitely I could see that happening, but I do agree that I think people are going to be watching out for Enzo doing that, and so I think that's another dangerous place to go for Memphis. If he is obviously linked up with Enzo, people are going to be like, oh. Well, I see what they're doing. This is obvious.
100%. I agree with that.
Yes. What about Kevin Campbell? Kevin Campbell is a hypothetical cast member. We talked about this a little bit with Keisha, that Kevin Campbell comes directly after season 10 and season 11. And Rob often talks about how, you know, people who are on seasons that are adjacent to each other often have a connection, just because it's like, hey, it's like passing the old guard. And you know, that's the new guys. And there's usually some events and stuff where they're able to meet. It wouldn't surprise me if Memphis at least has some kind of passing connection to Kevin Campbell. And they both come in, I think, with pretty low amount of connections. They both seem to be potentially new to the cast, new additions, and probably didn't have a ton of time to pregame and don't already have a lot of other established relationships. So I could see them coming together here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there's a good possibility, because that they played back to back of each other, that there's some kind of, you know, formality with them. There's some kind of connection that maybe will bond them together, or just the comfort of being like, oh, I know that person. I can at least go have a conversation with that person and then see what it turns into. Now, in the game aspect, I feel like they don't have a ton of similarities. I think that there are a few things that you could pick from each other's game that's like, okay, that could mesh well with each other. But it really is going to come down to, you know, this is someone I know. This is someone I recognize. I can at least go have a conversation with them, maybe get them in a room and possibly talk some game. And, you know, we're also old school players. Maybe we can, you know, build a bond on that, in the fact that we played around the same time. We're old school. There's a lot of these new school kids. Let's work together and try to make it far in this game. I can see that as a possibility. But I completely agree with you, Isaiah. I think Enzo is a dead on. That's 100% who he could line up with.
Oh, definitely. And I think that Kevin, just to go back to the Kevin Campbell, I definitely think that Kevin is a really adaptable type of personality in the Big Brother house and can try to like work with different types of people. So, I mean, I feel like he'd be trying to work with as many people as he could. And I think Memphis, just based off of that season connection that you guys were talking about, definitely could, I could see a bridge there.
Yeah. And Kevin also played with Jesse from Memphis's season. And I don't know what Memphis and Jesse's relationship is like, but it is even more of a connection there. Memphis and Jesse were, you know, they were fighting, but like they were in similar roles. They did fight at times, but they had similar roles in the season. Like they were, I think, similar kinds of people to work with at that point in time in Big Brother 10. So if Kevin can work with Jesse, then, you know, perhaps he can work with Memphis as well. So who knows? Who knows? What do we think? What do we think? Predictions for Memphis. How far is he going to go? Where is he going to land on this season of All Stars? Bobby, what do you think?
I think he could go very far. I honestly think that I at least think jury. I don't think anyone's coming after him. I think there's so many other targets ahead of him, especially winners. I think people are going to possibly target the winners right away, or they're going to target, you know, these new big threats like a Tyler, or like even maybe a Cody. They might come after some of these people that got far in the game, but I don't think Memphis is one of them. I think Memphis, because he's older, because he has a family, maybe he has a more emotional background, maybe he can tie in with people. I see him getting very far in this game. I don't know if it's final two. I would love to see it. If he does, then I'll be rooting for him. I think that he could get far. I'm going to say jury in this game.
Isaiah, what do you think?
I'm thinking jury too. I think just based off of the one season we've seen from him, he got very lucky to get out that first half of the game. He was struggling a lot. And in modern day Big Brother, a lot of the early games seem to be, let's make this big group of people and we can just ride it out till this point of the game. So, I mean, if something like that happens again, I can see Memphis possibly being one of the first people to be looked at just based off of his legacy alone. But I think that he has what it takes if he doesn't get in as many arguments and doesn't come off as too much of a comp threat with things like vetoes, that he can possibly make it fairly far. I think he has what it takes to make the final two to get him to the end, but I don't know if anyone's going to let another runner-up make it to that point.
I think it'll be interesting. I think that depending on the level of Dan's involvement in the pre-gaming, I think that you know, Memphis and Dan working together is a pretty dynamite combo. If they were working together in the pregame, it wouldn't surprise me if Memphis is decently set up when he walks in, although there have been a lot of changes, hypothetically speaking, to the cast. And so that pregaming might have been messed up by some of those changes. So I don't think that we can rely on that. But if he is set up decently well heading in, I think that he can last a little while based on that. And then we'll see whether Memphis can sink or swim on his own from that point forward. So I could see, yeah, that like sort of jury point, or maybe even right before jury point, being a moment for him, a defining moment for him of like, can he stand here on his own? Or I could see, you know, if he did some good pregame work and then things shifted, him heading in and being like, oh boy, this does not look how I thought it was going to look. And now I'm a pretty big target and I don't have a lot of connections, and I could see him being in trouble that way. I think he's a talented player. It's hard for me to see him winning this game. But that's me thinking of him 12 years ago. And so he could be a very different guy now. I'm not sure, but I'm very excited to find out. I know that.
Totally agree. And I think you touched it on the nose when you were saying you were talking about the connections, because I definitely think, just to look back at it on BB10, that a big point in his game was latching on to people with many connections like Keisha and Dan. So if he could possibly do something like that again, where he just latches on to people who know a lot of people, maybe that can definitely help him.
Yeah. Any final thoughts, Bobby?
Yeah. First off, quick question for you. How shocked are you that Jesse's not on this cast? Like how much he does with Big Brother and how much Grodner loves him. I was shocked to see that he wasn't. And who knows? He maybe is. We don't know for a fact. But yeah, no, as far as Memphis, I'm very excited to watch him again. I love that they're bringing in, hopefully, these old school players that have had so much time in between games that I just want to see where they're at in life and what kind of game they play on their own from maybe their core alliances. I think there's a lot to love about this cast, if it's the true cast, and the potential we'll get from them. I think that there's a lot of great players, and I really especially think Memphis could do well in this game. Just depends on the amount of love that he gets from the house and how, you know, good his strategic and emotional connections are in the house.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is what we have for Memphis. Isaiah, thank you so much for joining us. This was so much fun to talk with you. Where can people find you if they are looking for you on those BB internet streets?
So my Twitter is actually 8ballbangers, the number 8, B-A-L-L, and then bangers. Same thing for my Instagram. So if you want to look for me there, that's where you can find me. I'm just so happy that I'm being given this opportunity. And I just wanted to thank Rob and thank you. Just thank everybody for giving me this platform.
All right. Bobby, where can we find you?
Yeah, Isaiah, you did phenomenal, man. I'm looking forward to see you podcast in the future with us.
Thank you.
I am at Goodspeed Bobby on Twitter. And also for this Big Brother All-Star season, I'm going to be doing coverage for programminginsider.com. My good bud, Doug, got me the job with them. So I'm going to be writing articles about this whole Big Brother season. So come check me out at programminginsider.com.
There you go. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taran or twitch.tv/Taran Armstrong. Thank you so much for joining us as we talked about the other half of the OG Renegades. And we'll see you next time.
All right. Thanks again to Taran and Bobby and Isaiah breaking down everything that's going on with Memphis. It'll be interesting to see how Memphis does. I just think that he's mostly a low-key guy, even if Dan did give him a bunch of pointers about coming back. I think that he is going to try to just be sort of like a chill figure in the house. So I think that Memphis is going to be around for a while. I don't think he's going to be making too many waves in the early going. So I think that he should be at least around until the jury. Great job by everybody on the panel today. All right, that's going to do it for us here today. But tomorrow, we still have some more previews for you, and in tomorrow's episode, you are going to hear about the return prospects of the two more people who are, hypothetically speaking, coming back to play in Big Brother. And we're going to hear about the return of the Meow Meow, Enzo, and also David from last season. So let's see how those conversations turn out for Enzo and David coming up tomorrow on Hypothetically Speaking. Thanks again to everybody listening to all of these previews. Gotten a lot of great feedback about all this. And of course, thanks to Taran, who's able to fill in for me on these podcasts and allow me to celebrate the 10-year wedding anniversary, married to the wonderful first lady of podcasting, the great Nicole Sestrino. Okay, not Nicole A, not Nicole F, Nicole C. She was Nicole P when I found her. Now she's Nicole C. All right. Thank you again so much for listening. There is time left on your timeline. I know you think that there's probably more show coming, but there is a word from our sponsor that is going to be airing at the end of this podcast. BetOnline.ag presents a special presentation about the return, not just of Big Brother, but of sports to the world this summer. So if that's something you're interested in, enjoy that presentation here at the end of the episode. And if you're about to check out, well, we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Welcome to Fandemic 2020, presented by Bet Online. I'm your host, Bram Weinstein. We have an amazing panel of guests today. You see Harold Reynolds, who played infield in Major League Baseball for a number of years. You can see him every day on the MLB Network these days in his prestigious broadcasting career. Eddie George won the Heisman Trophy back in the 1990s, one of the best running backs in Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans history. And Robert Horry is one of the most clutch basketball players in NBA playoff history, a number of different championships with three different teams over 16 years. Hi to all of you. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me also.
All right, let's switch over to fans and let's talk about what that looks like, what that feels like. Eddie, you played at Ohio State. So you played at one of the most iconic, legendary venues that there is in American sport. You played in the NFL as well. So let's start with you here. The idea of playing football games without fans, that feels like what to you?
So I know what it feels like, and it's not fun. It's you need the energy to feed off of your whether your home or your home video. You need the fans to support you when you're down. You're trying to figure out how to force through adversity as a team, and you need the fan support. And also when you're on the road, you know, the opposing teams feed off of that same type of energy. So the fans are very much a part of sports like anything else. They are definitely they play a role in it. And that's the whole point, is the give and take. That's why they have home field advantage or home court advantage or home field advantage. It's definitely a feel to it. So what you're going to see is it's going to feel like a spring practice, if you will. It's going to feel like a glorified scrimmage. It's not going to have very much meaning without the fans. It's going to be a different feel.
Robert, for you, I mean, for your league, they're going right into the playoffs and there's no fans. What was your experience like having fans in the stands for playoff games? And what does it mean to you to not have them in what is the biggest moments of the season for the NBA?
Well, for me, I fed on fans' energy, and And I also love going into different, like the visiting team's arena and shutting them up, because it was nothing more satisfying than shutting them up and, you know, having that thrill. But I think sometimes people don't understand how much as athletes we need fans. We love fans and we appreciate them greatly. I know a lot of times we can act like we don't by not signing an autograph, but we really appreciate fans because they give us that energy in the fourth quarter and they let us and they excite us to get over that mountaintop. I think about when we played Portland in game 7 of Western Conference Finals and game 7 in the fourth quarter. You know, we down 20 points, but we got those fans behind us to come through and make them nervous. You know, that helped us. That's why you play for home court advantages, for these moments like this, when you need those fans behind you to get you over the top. So it's hard to play without fans, but I will say this, without fans, you're going to see who is the best. You can see who has the heart and the mindset to get over the top, because they don't have the fans to push them or give them that extra mile. So now the true talented people are going to come through at the end.
I got to tell you, though, Harold, I mean, as a fan, that is one of the unintended good consequences here of all of this, that we get to hear the things that we've always wanted to hear that we weren't sure was ever really going on.
Hey, Eddie, I'm curious, with in football, so much of the vocabulary is shared from team to team, yeah, like your audible in plays and stuff like that. How will that play?
That's a great point, because, you know, the Patriots, they got in trouble for getting their audibles. They're getting their signals. They're knowing when they're checking. They're getting – so that's going to be interesting, because to have the crowd noise to mute that out helps. And you can't pick up on things. But when you can pick up, like, check with me, you know, going right, you know, Wrangler and lefty, whatever it is. I mean, you can pick up on those things. So I think the NFL, in terms of game planning, week to week, they're going to have to change up their vocabulary to communicate what they want from play to play. And it's going to be interesting to see how that happens.
From a health perspective, we've established you guys to some level would miss the fans in their presence. But what concern do you have about people being in the stands in general?
Well, I think if you want to get through the season, it's going to have to be without fans, because you can't risk a fan coming down shaking somebody's hand. Your natural reaction, somebody says hi to you, you want to reach out your hand, right? Fist pump, whatever. What happens if a player contacts COVID through a fan? You're going to contact all the fans and you're going to shut a team down? I just think it's difficult enough to keep the team clean and healthy and not to involve fans. And I know that's not what everybody wants to hear, but I think that's where we're at right now. And like I said, this is ever evolving. Who knows? By the time we get to September, it might totally be different. But I think for now, as we're starting up and trying to just get players on the field, I find it difficult to think they're not going to interact with fans. It's just a natural thing to do. So I think that complicates the problem. That's just my thought.
Eddie, what about you? You said you fed off the fans. You liked having them there. With the public health and your personal health, if you were playing at risk, how do you feel about the idea of fans being in the stands?
I think it can be done. I think if you can find the right capacity and you can begin to kind of tarp off different sections of the stadium, because not every even in normal time, not every stadium is going to be full anyway. So it's only certain markets, certain places. And I think teams that are at full capacity on the average need to have those plans out. I think if fans come in with masks on, they provide hand sanitizers, they're laid out a certain protocol that there are no player-fan interactions, there are no autographs, lay all the rules out on the table, I think it can be done appropriately. I think if you can somehow manage the concessions, you know, 6 feet distance, making sure people go in one way all the time, that they're not all over the place. If you can provide that in terms of a stadium environment and that experience, it can be done. I don't think the players can necessarily attract COVID. I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor. Through fan interaction, just by them being there, it's more on the field that from other players they can get it. Well, in terms of having fans in the stands, it can be done if it's done appropriately, responsibly, and it has to be well thought out. And they have to check, be able to check the temperatures of people, do testing and screening prior to that. I think it can be done.
Harold, would you play? Would you have played?
Would I have played? Yeah, I probably would have. You know, I was single throughout most of my career. I mean, through all my career, I was single. I didn't get married till after baseball. So, yeah, I probably would have played. I can understand guys that have the challenges, though, because of the fact that, well, you look at Mike Trout. You know, his wife is expecting their first child in August. And I remember being in spring training before the shutdown, talking to Mike, and he was so ecstatic about being home and asking me, what was it like in the delivery room when your kids were born? And he was all enthusiastic about all that. That's something you think about forever, yeah. Particularly with the first one. And so now, knowing that the date was going to be in August, he was like, I'll probably miss a couple games, but I'll be back. Then the pandemic hits, and he's thrown into this whole decision of what is he going to do? And I'll throw this at you guys real quick. The challenge for these players is not taking care of yourself. It's all your teammates. Everybody's in it. So I don't know what they're doing when they leave and who they're around and everything else. I think that's what presents even more of a challenge with contact testing, where if someone all of a sudden outside of your sphere has had contact with somebody, now you all of a sudden you got to get quarantined. And so those are the challenges. And I know that's what Mike Trout is really struggling with. So that said, and that long answer, being single with no kids all through my career, yeah, I'd have probably played. But had I had family, like Robert was talking about, it presents a different challenge.
Robert, would you have played if you were still playing right now? Would you play?
I probably would have because, it also depends on where I am at my career. You know, if I'm like 5 years in, 10 years in, or like if it was like 16 years at the end of my career, I wouldn't do it just because I know I'm older. I know my wife had heart issues and I got a young kid at home. So I probably wouldn't play. And plus, I've made enough money that I didn't have to play. So it that makes a big difference on where you are. My career was established. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, and plus I had 7 championships. So I'm not trying to win another one, you know, but. And it's hard to say, man, because you love the game of basketball. You love your sport and you want to get out there and show your craft and do your craft at the best of its ability. And it would be one of those things. You have to really sit down with your family and discuss it and see what they want you to do. And it would be hard. But for me, and I know me and my wife, I would have said, no, I'm not playing because, I played enough and my life. And my family life is more important than getting some, you know, playing a basketball game.
All right, let's end on a big picture question. Optimistically, all of the leagues you're going to play, all of them are going to crown a champion. Harold, I want you to go last because baseball is such a unique position with how they're structuring their schedule and all of that stuff this year. But let's start with the NBA since they would be the first to literally crown a champion if they can play. Is there an asterisk, Robert, for whoever wins this thing this year?
I played in the 1999 season where, you know, we want to put an asterisk by the San Antonio Spurs season because it was a lockout. I think anytime you win a championship is a great accomplishment. So there shouldn't be an asterisk. It's not like like half the guys didn't try to compete and play, but everybody's out to compete and everybody has the same advantage that you have. I'm not one of these guys that believe in the asterisk. I think if you get out there and compete, and you do what you're supposed to do to try to win the championship, you win that championship. You play hard as an individual. You did your thing. I know a lot of people, I guarantee you, if your team doesn't win it, you're going to say it. And if your team does win it, he goes like, oh, it's not an asterisk season. We compete like everybody else. So I think when you say asterisk, that's just bad because everybody had the same opportunity to go out and compete and win the championship. And you should have put yourself in a position to have the best advantage possible to win a championship.
All right. Big thank you to our panel today. Harold Reynolds, who you can, of course, see on the MLB Network, played a number of years in the majors. Eddie George, a Heisman Trophy winner, of course, one of the greatest running backs in Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans history. And Robert Ori, one of the most clutch shooters in the history of the NBA, a winner of 7 championships, and has the rest of them so jealous because he's got 7 rings. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. And to the fans out there, thank you for joining us for Fandemic 2020, brought to you by Bet Online.